Farley, thanks for joining me on the podcast again, man. Happy to have you back on here.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Ray. I enjoyed our talk last time. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard Farley's first episode, this is a little bit more about your career. You released your first book, Unknown Writer. Your second book is out, Outlaw, right now. And I think it pairs well based on your experience, what we're going to talk about today, being a Navy aggressor, a Top Gun grad. Again, this series is kind of pairing with our Air Force brethren, with some things that happened in the past, as well as what's going on today. And I just want to talk about aggressors and what an aggressor is and what the Navy program looks like. So can you, broad brush, tell me, what is a Navy aggressor?
Yeah, so, and it's a little semantics, but Air Force refers to their red air as aggressors. Navy refers to them as adversaries, but it's potato, potato. And what happened is in 1969, when Top Gun was started, and you know, just the other day was the 55th anniversary of Top Gun being founded. They were using the A4 to do dissimilar air training, and they sort of formalized that. They were the first organization to formalize dissimilar air training, and it was so successful that all the Navy instrument squadrons that were flying A4s at each of the jet bases then transitioned to become adversary squadrons, and the Air Force followed suit shortly after that. And we know that, you know, the programs have evolved over time. I know you've talked about the Red Eagles and some of the stuff that they did. But essentially what an adversary or aggressor mission is to take, usually a dissimilar aircraft or something that can replicate a threat aircraft and have pilots trained to threat tactics so that they can simulate what a fighter might experience in actual combat.
So, and correct me wrong, you went to Top Gun and your focus was being an aggressor. That's something a little bit different than the Air Force does. So can you tell me what that looks like and what the responsibilities of a Navy adversary air is?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you go to Top Gun, you can either go through, there's three different roles that essentially students go through. There's the fighter role, which is the traditional, you know, we're talking about the 1986 movie with, you know, Tom Cruise and the F-14. We call those blue patch wearers. So the fighters are blue patch wearers. And then there's the adversary students, and they are basically opposing the fighter students. So when you think about the original movie, and I try to put everything in terms of the, you know, I call it a documentary, other people call it a movie, whatever. The Viper and Jester were the adversaries. Now, the instructors will lead in the actual Top Gun, instructors will lead both sides or will participate on both sides of it. So they're trained in threat tactics, they're trained in fighter tactics. But an adversary student, like myself, when I went through, my job was to develop a game plan based on whatever the scenario was that the students were going to encounter. So for instance, if they were doing an offensive counter air mission where they were going to fly into an area, sweep the target for enemy aircraft to allow strikers to come in behind them, then my job would be to defend the homeland. And so I might set up a coastal patrol in a simulated coastline, because in Fallon, Nevada, there's no coastline, but I would set up a coastal patrol. I'd set up maybe viz caps where I'd have F5s down low looking up and seeing if they see the fighters. And if they do, then they would engage them. I would have strip alerts, like aircraft sitting on the ground in Fallon, and I would launch them to chase after the fighters as they're trying to egress. So we would just build scenarios that you might encounter in a real world environment. And so as a student going through Top Gun, I would lead for the two plane phase. So when it was just a section of fighters, I would lead a smaller number. And then when it would grow to a four ship or a division phase, I'd lead a larger number of fighters. So it would be not uncommon for me to have 20 red air on any given event. And they would have different roles. They would have different caps. And I would just be whatever the threat was, if it was China, if it was Russia, if it was whatever it was for that scenario that day, I would just build a presentation around that. And so that's what it was going through the class. I mentioned there were three roles. The third one was a controller. And the controllers are trained how to affect intercepts using standard Top Gun comm. And the goal is for all of us actually to go back to the fleet and to train our squadrons or other units on how to employ tactics per Top Gun. So that's the same in terms of the Air Force. You have a fighter or you have a weapons school graduate that's sort of like the acknowledged expert. It's the same thing in the Navy, but it's just handled a little bit differently in terms of, you know, red air, blue air, and controllers.
Do you get to pick which? I mean, obviously, you're not going to pick the controller pipeline if you're a pilot, but right. Do you get to pick red or blue going to Top Gun, or is that something you're told, hey, you're going to go be X or Y?
Yeah, it depends on your really on the job that you're going to have. So normally when you go to Top Gun, it's after your first fleet tour. So you graduate pilot training, you are a brand new, let's say F-18 pilot, and you go to your first squadron. You go on a cruise on a carrier, do a 3-year tour, and then now you're up for a shore tour, we call it in the Navy. And a shore tour can be, you can be an instructor, you know, in T-45, instructor in the F-18, at the training squadrons. You could go to one of the weapons schools. So there's the East Coast Weapons School in Virginia Beach, West Coast Weapons School in Lemoore, and then obviously Top Gun, which falls under NAUDIC, the Naval Aviation Warfighting Development Center at Fallon. And so they have staffs. You can be an instructor at Top Gun. You can be on the staff at NAUDIC, which handles some air wing training stuff. And they have billets for each of those to be a blue patch wearer. So, for instance, when I was going through F-18 training at VFA 106 in Virginia Beach, we had an instructor who was a Top Gun graduate, and his job was really to kind of control the fighter phase of training and to make sure that we were all being trained to the current tactics. And then when I went to my fleet squadron, I had a training officer in that squadron who was also a Top Gun graduate. And that job, the training officer job in a squadron, is after your shore tour. So after you were at the weapons school at Top Gun or at the RAG as a patch wearer. So really, it's based on what job you are going to get. So for me, when I finished my first fleet tour, I went to the T-45, and they didn't have any Top Gun graduates that were there. But when I went back to flying the F-18, I went to an adversary squadron. And so there's 4 adversary squadrons in the Navy. They're all in the reserves. Some, they have some active duty component, like members there. And then they have some traditional reservists. Initially, I went as an active component guy. And because I was in that job, they sent me through an in-house syllabus to train me up on adversary. And then they sent me to Top Gun. So that's how I got the adversary. That's how I got in the adversary path. But it differs for everybody. But again, it's all based strictly on the job. So you sort of get to choose, but obviously the needs of the Navy, you know, override everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the placement of the squadron. So for those who aren't familiar, the Air Force, we run all of our aggressors out of Nellis. But for the Navy, that, again, is a little bit different. As you already alluded to, mostly reservists with a slight active component. Right. Can you tell me like the footprint and the laydown of the Navy adversary air?
The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
I want to tell you about a service I've been using for over a year now, Aurora. I signed up and they immediately identified over 60 data brokers out there selling my information. The best part is they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. I have a link down below where you get a 14-day free trial. It's risk-free and you can cancel anytime. So it's worth taking a shot and seeing what information is out there. But it's more than just that. They have an app which includes antivirus, VPN, password management, all built into one package. You can use the app or you can use the browser to stay safe out there in the digital space. Again, I have a link down below. You can check it out for 2 weeks free. And if you don't like it, you can cancel anytime.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Yeah, so traditionally, so we have two, what we call master jet bases, what I think is a pretty pretentious term, but Oceana and Virginia Beach is the East Coast master jet base. So that's where all the now Super Hornets are based on the East Coast. On the West Coast is Lemoore. And of the two, Lemoore does not have an adversary squadron. Virginia Beach does. So let me come back to that point in a minute. So Virginia Beach has VFC 12 and the Omars. They were flying the Legacy Hornets. Now they're flying the Super Hornet in that adversary mission. And then there was a VFA 204, which I was a part of for 13 years down in New Orleans, flying the Legacy Hornet. When I got there, it was the A plus model, and we eventually transitioned to the C model Hornet. And then there was VFC 13 in Fallon, Nevada. They really supported Top Gun Evolutions. They supported air wing training at Nautic, flying the F5 and Tiger II. Well, the fighter training squadrons, like 106, would go down to Key West a lot because, number one, why wouldn't you want to go to Key West to do some of your training? And number two, it's just got great airspace. It's all over the water. And so they were flying down there a lot, needed red air. And so you'd have VFC 12 would come down, 204 would come down, 13 would go down. Well, eventually 13 was spending so much time there that they decided to establish a debt. And so it was VFC 13 debt Key West, which eventually became VFC 111, which they resurrected an old Sundowners squadron from World War II. And now they're flying F5s in Key West. So back to the point I was making about no adversary squadron in Lemoore. As the F-18 started getting older and they were looking to replace the F-18 with something else, VFC 12, again, got the Super Hornet. VFA 204 was slated to get F-16s. I guess the Air Force had some F-16s, I think in Wisconsin or something, and they were looking to get rid of them because they were going to the F-35. And so the Navy bought them and said, okay, we're going to give them to 204. And the Navy, and probably what was the right idea, was we wanted to move this adversary squadron, you know, this fourth gen fighter capability to Lemoore, which is a master jet base. And then politicians got involved. So Louisiana has a pretty strong political base. There's some pretty strong, you know, senators that really are trying to keep the military in New Orleans because New Orleans has suffered from Katrina and whatnot. And so they said, nope, you can't move 204 out of New Orleans. And so the Navy said, okay, well, we still want the F-16s on the West Coast, so we're going to send them to Fallon, which is close to Lemoore. And then we'll give 204 the F-5s. So the F-16s that my squadron was supposed to get went to Fallon, Nevada. So now VFC 13 is flying F-16s. And my old squadron is now VFC 204 flying F-5s. So a lot of shuffling going on, but essentially you want to have one fourth gen F-18, F-16 squadron on each coast. And then you want to have kind of a lesser simulation using the F-5 also. Now the Marines kind of have they have an F-5 squadron down in Yuma, which helps, but that's primarily just, you know, for Marine training.
That's interesting how politics get involved. That's how we end up with C-17s we don't want, or we can't get rid of planes that we need to get rid of, et cetera, et cetera. But for another conversation, interesting, you know, the Air Force recently pivoted. They had a lot of adversary air contracts, so contractors flying A-4s, F-16s, which still occurs, but made a rather drastic switch. I believe it was last year with Draken, which is a big company flying adversary air out at Nellis, augmenting the aggressor squadrons, augmenting Red Flag, Weapons School, et cetera, as well as other places around the nation. And that contract shrunk significantly. And then the Air Force announced, hey, we're going to use F-35s as aggressors trying to match a near peer threat and getting ready for a potential next fight. Is the Navy looking at doing anything? Have you? I know you're a little bit further out of the game, but have you heard any rumblings or discussions about fifth gen adversary air?
There has been. The last time I talked to the guys that are kind of still in the know, the F-35 is something that they're looking at. Just after spending 22 years in the Navy and seeing the way that our acquisitions work, I don't believe, I have a hard time believing that they will give F-35s to Navy reserve squadrons. I mean, considering they replaced the F-18C model Hornet with, you know, a fighter that was established, developed in 1954, you know, right. The F-5, I thought it was a poor decision. And I have a hard time believing they're going to, you know, give us F-35s, but it's needed. I mean, you know, we use data link. We use a lot of other tools to try to replicate some of these more advanced threats that are out there. But at the end of the day, when you get in the visual arena, you know, if you don't have the capabilities, you're not going to really give as good a training as you could. So yeah, we still use, I know ATAC is a big company we use. There's, you know, Draken, there's a few other contract adversary programs that are out there. TACAIR is another one. They're actually flying heavily modified F-5s. And most of those, at least the way when I was in, that we were using them, is they would augment the adversary squadron. So the adversary squadron was still the lead for whatever event it was, and they would just use these contract air to kind of augment that. And it would be for a very specific role. So if we were doing training for a carrier air wing off the coast of California, we might use, we would have LEERs that would do maybe simulated cruise missile profiles, or we would have, you know, ATAC with their Hawker Hunters, you know, doing some sort of, you know, low and slow kind of attack aircraft trying to get into the carrier's defenses. But at the time, they weren't allowed to engage more than 180 degrees, so they were very limited. So anytime there was going to be an in-close engagement with a fighter, it was going to be a active duty or a reserve adversary pilot doing it.
Are you a passionate aviation enthusiast? Then you'll be thrilled to hear about our sponsor, Air Corps Aviation. This exciting company has been revolutionizing the aviation industry since 2008, and they have some amazing career opportunities available. More about that in just a minute. Air Corps Aviation is at the forefront of airworthiness of legacy aircraft dating all the way back to World War II. Their dedicated team is involved in various aspects of aerospace, including manufacturing, fabrication, restoration, and support, using state-of-the-art technology. Their exceptional expertise in core manufacturing capabilities like metal forming, CNC machining, and complete aircraft rebuilding has led to the restoration of some award-winning aircraft, such as a couple P-51s, such as P-51 Thunderbird, Twilight Tier, and Sierra Sioux 2. And if you've been following me for a while, you might remember I was fortunate enough to fly over the Super Bowl in 2018 in Minneapolis. The formation was led by Sierra Sioux 2 alongside two A-10s and myself in the F-16, so this is a very cool full-circle experience. These incredible achievements have captured the attention of aircraft owners, aviation enthusiasts, and the general public alike. If you've always dreamt of a career in aviation, then Air Corps Aviation is the perfect place for you. They are rapidly expanding their team in 2024 and have job openings in departments such as engineering and CAD, quality assurance, fabrication, and restoration. This is your chance to turn a passion into profession. Air Corps Aviation is offering some amazing benefits for full-time positions, including health insurance, PTO, HSA, retirement plans, life insurance, and the extra perk of enjoying Fridays off. If you're ready to be part of a team dedicated to fulfilling the dreams through the preservation of historical aircraft, visit aircorpsaviation.com/careers today and take the first step towards an exciting career in aviation. Again, that's aircorpsaviation.com/careers. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, for the Air Force, using the T-38, again, 1960s technology, trained a great piece of metal in the sky to, if you can throw numbers and having to solve numbers, but yep. Like the F-5, it's not going to present complex problem sets to fighters training today, other than the quantity aspect, if you can generate that.
Right.
Jumping back to Top Gun. So Air Force Weapons School,
every weapon system, F-16, F-22, F-15, they all have a weapon school. All those, everyone shows up on the same day, more or less. They run through a 6-month program. They do it twice a year. There's integration, et cetera. What is the footprint of Top Gun? Is it the same for adversaries and the same for guys going through the blue patch?
Yeah, it is. So you go through the same class. So typically you might have, I can't remember exact numbers, but you might have 12 fighter students in a class and then 4 adversary students and 2 controllers. And they'll go through the entire program together from start to finish. Obviously, ground school is pretty much all the same. And then they sort of branch off where the fighters will go learn specific blue stuff. And then adversaries will go learn, you know, threat stuff. But both are really kind of expected to know what the other is doing. And so the footprint is the same. It's grown. I can't remember what it was, 8 weeks. And I think maybe it's grown a little bit now. But they usually have 4 classes a year. And like I said, you start together, you graduate together. You're just doing different missions during that time. For fighters and adversaries, it starts out the same. Like I said, ground school, then we go to a BFM phase where you work on, offensive perch, defensive perch, high aspect BFM, and then you do a 2v1. The difference would be that the fighters would be doing the 2 and the adversary would be doing the 1. But we're both adversaries and the blue patch wearers are taught in BFM to be BFM instructors. So when I graduate, I could go fly with a new F-18 pilot from BFA 106 and lead him on a BFM sortie as an instructor. And that's kind of what we were trained to do. And then once we got out of the BFM phase and into the multi-ship, that's when our roles really completely were segregated at that point. But, one of the funny things is the adversary lead for an event was the one who did the overall mass brief. And there was, questions of the day. It's very standard, I'm sure, across, Air Force and Navy. There, you have a threat of the day and you've got, other systems questions of the day that you have to answer. And so as the adversary lead, I would always put my kneeboard card that had my plan, that had the Red Air's plan in my box, in the skiff, in my box, so that the fighter lead could go look at it if you wanted to. So we'd have a little bit of tipper on what the mission was going to look like. But then I would also say who I was going to ask. Like, I was going to call on this person to ask the question of the day. And the idea was to cooperate, to graduate mentality. Like, they're my friends. I want to help them out. And one day I was leading a mission and they asked, like, it was SAN-6, I think was the threat of the day. And so I called on the guy who I wrote down I was going to ask. And he obviously wasn't prepared because he'd written the answers. Yeah. And so he's like standing up in front of the room, in the auditorium, and he's like looking at his hand, reading the answers. In the back of the room, you could see all the Top Gun instructors that were like with their pen, like writing notes. And like, bro, man, I tried giving it to you. So yeah, it was pretty fun. It was a good time though.
Never sort the schedule. That was the saying. All right, that is a saying, right? Because you never know who's going to show up too. So that's one of the things, like sometimes for sorties, you can generate, there might be a plan where an IP finds another jet somehow, and then it shows up and you think there's 6 guys stepping as adversaries, but then there's a 7th one that shows up somehow magically in the fight.
Yep. Yep.
But you're always working, trying to make it happen.
Yeah.
As when you're going through Top Gun as an adversary, I assume you're probably having at some point to, I guess, dig down and become a subject matter expert on some particular topic of a near peer threat or some kind of threat out there. Mm-hmm. What was yours? What does that look like?
During Top Gun, we were expected to know, just based on what the event was, what that threat was. So if, for an earlier event, it might be that the Su-27 is going to be the threat. Or there might be a piece of EW equipment that we are going to simulate. And so we were expected to know that for that event. But in terms of being able to brief, build a certain missile or a certain jet or whatever, that subject matter expertise didn't really come into play until after you left Top Gun and you went to a squadron, and then the squadron would might designate certain people to be SMEs on different things. And then, you know, across the Navy Reserve, certain squadrons might be experts on certain topics. So like, I think VFC 111 was the BFM, you know, subject matter expert. So they were the ones that were sort of, they held the standard, if you will, for all adversaries in the Navy Reserve for that. And they might do stand checks and things of that nature. But so I didn't really have a specific red topic that I was a subject matter okay. expert in. I just sort of kind of jack of all trades, master of none, if you will.
Yeah, fair enough. The, yeah. You mentioned BFM obviously before and just again, but basic fighter maneuvering. You said when you know you're going through as an adversary in Top Gun, mm-hmm. basically want you to come out and be able to instruct BFM for a new guy coming out of the rag. When you're doing BFM in Top Gun or even afterwards, are you in an adversary mindset, meaning like, hey, I'm in a MiG-21, I'm in a MiG-20 or you know, Su-27, so I'm thrust limited, or are you flying the Hornet the best you can fly the Hornet?
Yeah, no, in the BFM phase at Top Gun, you're flying a Hornet, and you're flying the Hornet to the best of its ability, and your whole goal is to be able to translate that to a student, you know, and to be able to explain to them why you want to fight your jet this way. When we get into where we're doing a red air mission and I'm BFMing, now I'm going to treat my aircraft as if it were whatever I'm simulating that day, you know. So there are certain handcuffs we would put on ourselves based on the aircraft performance. So I can't remember them all now, but I might be able to max perform the F-18 for through 90 degrees of turn, but then I'm limited to, you know, 4 Gs, something like that. I might be able to use my radar to its gimbal limits for one aircraft, but for another, I have to limit it to, you know, a certain azimuth. So an actual adversary mission, we're flying it like that, including in the visual arena, like whatever that simulation is. But for a BFM mission that I'm doing at Top Gun or with a RAG student, I'm flying it like an F-18. So they know what to expect.
Why do we need aggressors? Why don't we just, have a squadron and some days guys are good, some days guys are bad?
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest reason, because I've been thinking about that a little bit, there's obviously, you know, as a fighter pilot, there's a little bit of ego involved, you know, like you go out with your bro and you're doing a 1v1, you want to crush him. He wants to crush you. There's no real learning objective. It's really more bragging rights for the O Club, if you will. You know, you just want to come back with that gun footage and to show all your buddies, look, you know, I gunned him. And it's fun. I mean, and that's how you become a better fighter pilot. But are we really learning, you know, what we should be learning? So for example, you know, let's say we send a carrier over to the Straits of Taiwan, you know, China is now invading. I don't want those fighter pilots that are going to be going up against Chinese fighter pilots to think that every single engagement is going to be how it was when they were dogfighting their bro. You know, they need to know how that aircraft that they're encountering is going to perform. They need to know what its limitations are, what its strengths are. And so that's what a professional adversary squadron or aggressor squadron is going to give you. You're going to have an opportunity to test your tactics against, you know, somebody that knows how to replicate that threat. And I think that's vital. And that's why we saw, you know, 1969 when Top Gun started, you know, formalizing DACT and when, you know, the Red Eagles, you know, and Constant Peg, when they were flying actual MiGs, you know, that's why there was value in that, because there wasn't going to be a surprise in the real world environment. Now, one of the interesting things at Top Gun, they have what they call a grad 1v1. It's really more or less for fun. It's a one day where they bring in aircraft from all over the country, all different types. We've had Raptors, A-10s, T-45s, F-16s, Super Hornets, you name it. Everybody comes in, and it's a pretty fun time when you'll get an envelope and it'll have your call sign, your whoever you're fighting's call sign, It'll give you a merge time, merge place, altitude, and you don't know who that is. It could be an A-10, it could be an F-16, it could be a Raptor, it could be whatever. You just don't know until you get to the merge. And when you get to the merge, you immediately have to go, okay, this is how I'm going to fight my jet in this fight, because the way I fight the Hornet against an F-16 is different than the way I fight it against a T-45 or an A-10. And so knowing how to adapt your tactics based on who you're encountering is a vital skill. And I think that's what adversary squadrons really bring to the table.
Yeah, man. One, that does sound like a blast, just being able to meet at a point and go fight what you see.
Yeah.
I also think too, you know, it's nice having a professional adversary where they know it, right? And you're not sitting in the vault after the brief or before the brief trying to figure out, hey, what kind of threat,
right,
you know, picture you're going to replicate, etc. Allowing guys and gals to focus on blue tactics and how you would actually go out and fight, and let the adversaries worry about generating a authentic and real replication of what they might see out there. So I think that's a huge bonus as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, master, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. I mean, that's for a long time. That's what 204 was doing. We still had a strategic blue reserve asset where we technically could be deployed on a carrier and fill in for, you know, active duty squadron, but that sort of meant like we were sort of good at adversary, sort of good at blue, but really not great at one specific one. And so they finally did away with that. And so now its focus is completely adversary.
Yeah. And we've kind of rushed through this episode, but the Navy, if I'm mistaken, but currently flying F-18s, F-5s, and F-16s as aggressors. Am I missing any?
Nope. That's it.
Yeah. Not bad. Well, Farley, I think you're going to hang around for an aggressor there I was story. But before we do that too, again, quick teaser for the new book and what it's about.
So the series that I'm writing right now is called, it's the Battleborn thriller series. And it's all kind of hinged around naval aviation, military aviation. And so there's some espionage stuff in there. So the first book, Unknown Rider, followed Colt Bancroft, who was a Top Gun instructor, flying the F-35, and his F-35 kind of gets taken over. Don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the second book in the series, Outlaw, which came out February 20th. I got a nice picture here. It's got a carrier on it, so that's a clue. But it follows after Unknown Rider. It is a standalone, but it makes sense if you read the first one. But really what inspired this was a guy that I got winged with, Captain Brett Crozier. He was formerly a helicopter pilot that became a jet pilot. So I got winged with him in the jet pipeline. He ended up being the commanding officer of the Theodore Roosevelt. So during COVID, if you recall, the COVID started spreading around the ship. We didn't really know. Right. It was early days. We really didn't know what was happening. He's obviously worried for his crew, and so he's trying to do the best thing for his people. And but the carrier was a strategic asset that was there to prevent, you know, China from invading Taiwan or whatever. And it really got me thinking, like, what would happen if this wasn't just like a virus that we didn't know about, but like a targeted bioweapon? And so the premise of Outlaw is that that there is a synthetic bioweapon that is unleashed on an aircraft carrier, and how they kind of combat that, both on the espionage side and the intelligence community, how they're handling it, as well as what's it look like when you're a pilot based on that carrier, still having to fight a war with this unknown virus kind of ravaging the ship. So that's the basis for Outlaw, and that's so far it's gotten pretty positive reviews, and I think it's pretty entertaining. If you like military aviation, you might enjoy this one.
Awesome. I'll have that link down below. Again, Outlaw. Farley, thanks for joining me. If you hang around for There I Was, we'll talk There I Was aggressor story. So I appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
I want to tell you about a service I've been using for over a year now, Aurora. I signed up and they immediately identified over 60 data brokers out there selling my information. The best part is they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. I have a link down below where you get a 14-day free trial. It's risk-free and you can cancel anytime. So it's worth taking a shot and seeing what information is out there. But it's more than just that. They have an app which includes antivirus, VPN, password management, all built into one package. You can use the app or you can use the browser to stay safe out there in the digital space. Again, I have a link down below. You can check it out for 2 weeks free. And if you don't like it, you can cancel anytime.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.